Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents City of Ruin by Charissa Weeks, narrated by Meg Sylvan and Tim Campbell. Fury.
I've been dead to the world since the bitter winter after Odin and Thaumaeus killed one another. I'm uncertain how long it's been since King Garon's authorities carried me north to torture me to death, chained me to the black, icy cliffs along the abyss of Pensia. How many days, months, years, decades, centuries have stretched from then to now? But I have an inkling. Once upon a time, I beheld my future through the eyes of a weary traveler. Though much of my body has decayed since then, I still have my angry heart. More terrifying, I still have my god's damn mind. Then again, creatures like me are hard to kill. And we never, ever forget. When I wouldn't die, the King's Brotherhood locked me far beneath the earth, entombed in a prison of dirt, stone, and suffocating iron, and prayed to Loria that the kingdom's people would let me slip from recollection. What a gift if my immortal bones would turn to dust as forever came and went. But here, in this unforgiving crypt, with darkness and memories as my only friends, I still exist. My eternal torment paused like a held breath as the Ancient One's whispers reach my ears. The god spirits who've been waiting for my justice, my salvation, my vengeance. He's coming, they promise me, communicating the only way they can from the Shadow World's imperial fields. The man from the east, he's coming. I have been called beauty. I have been called love. But I am fury. And some fool is going to bring me back to life.
One. Memories. One. The prince with no name. The Eastern Territories, city of Khazira. Minthuret Temple, right hall. Thaumaeus's ancient ritual room is deathly quiet, save for the crackling of flames and the sizzle of my blood burning in the offering bowl. Hear me, my lord, I beg you. My slit palm throbs as I squeeze crimson drops from my body for the third time today. This time I let the blood flow, no gentle pricks, no careful measure. Instead, warm scarlet rivers seep through my fisted fingers and pour into the fire. I've knelt here long enough that the morning sunlight shining through the stained glass windows upon my arrival has changed to the silvery glow of a coming winter's starlight. My back has grown stiff and my knees ache, having been pressed against the unforgiving stone floor for so many hours. A servant enters the room to deliver fresh water. He sets the decanter near the altar along with cloths soaked in yarrow tincture for my ritual wounds. "Are you sure you're all right, my prince?" he asks for the second time within the hour. "You look so unwell." "Because I haven't consumed a soul in over a week," I reply, my voice tight and hard. When I sifted to this very room from the shadow world, collapsing in the ritual circle with Colden Moeshka in my arms, I could barely move. Parts of my body were burned from Rainer Bloodgood's fire, and my insides felt like they might crumble any second. Already I starved. But after feeling Garujo die, his Summerlander powers with him, and after so much death in the north, I couldn't stomach the thought of feeding. Since then my skin has taken on a waxen sheen and my veins stand out in relief. I need no looking glass to know my face is gaunt, my body thinner. "Perhaps you should eat," the servant says. He glances over the healing gash across my face before lifting his gaze toward the rafters. The souls of three prisoners hover in waiting, silken and billowing. One smells like seawater, another like sweet earth, the final like the tall cedars in the east's forgotten forest. Tonight I will feed and begin the task of restoring myself. If I don't, I will die. And yet, miserable as I am, and much as I need to abandon these prayers and feast, I cannot make myself give up. Not yet. Go. I force every bit of annoyance I possess into the word. I want to be left alone, do you understand? He nods and hurries from the room, closing the wooden doors quietly. It's been weeks since I've been inside the temple. Weeks since I last heard Thameos's transcendental voice commanding that I go to the Northlands. I fear no matter how long I remain on my knees, he might not hear me, or perhaps he changed his mind about our plan and shunned me. I pray I'm wrong, because I've brought him quite the gift. From the moment I laid the godknife on the sunlit altar, I swore my lord spoke to me from the shadow world. A hushed murmur crept through the halls of this holy place, then all fell silent and still. I need his instruction, his direction, his assurance. And so I bleed and wait. Once again I dip my fingers into the blood and draw three runes on the altar. Connection, faithfulness, fealty. With a deep breath I press my forehead to the marble dais, the very place where Thameos and the Eastern Territory's kings and queens once rested, watching rituals performed in their names. An arm's length away stands the gilded throne that will soon be mine, an honour I must earn. Eternal Emperor of Tiresia. We no longer desire your world, Thameos once said, but the nether reaches are not our home and our realm of Eridan is no more. The gods can rise and offer their immortal life forces to Tiresia's blessed lands, an offering to you that you might know true power through us, because you are the one who will unite this empire, my little prince. Perhaps even the world. A thought flutters through my mind. When I take the sovereign seat, will my lord grant the memory of my true name, the memory of who I was before I became his? A distant part of me longs to know, to be more than a nameless being hidden by shadows, surviving off souls. At times I remember that young man, like right now. Something in the act of worship and ritual is familiar in my marrow, beyond my years as Thameos has chosen. Even beyond my years as a vagabond along the eastern coast. I also remember magic. Potent, wild and dark, flowing hot in my veins. My magic, controlled by me and me alone. A cold draught tickles the hair at the nape of my neck. I lift my head as the flame in every bronze brazier throughout the hall flickers but holds, as though a gentle breath has been blown over the fiery light. Little prince. Thameos's voice drifts into this room of devotion, ritual, and sacrifice, and any rising memory is swept away. You failed, my lord whispers in a sibilant voice. You didn't kill them, not all of them, thanks to that witch walker from Silver Hollow. I shut my eyes, and a bead of sweat trickles down the side of my neck. It's cold in the ritual hall tonight, yet anger burns hot as a bonfire in my chest. Thameos's last instruction had been to capture Colden Moeshka, the Frost King, and to destroy every witchwalker living along the edge of Frostwater Wood. I did that, save for that damned Rainer Bloodgood and a handful of others, and it wasn't easy. I hadn't the strength to last any longer, my lord. Garujo withered after the attack on Winterhold. My siphoning killed him. I press a hand against the dark granite altar and inhale a ragged breath. I've turned many people to husks in my long life, but my misery over Garujo's death is suffocating. Though he offered his life for my survival, the loss weighs too heavy. The witch also had help, I continue. Undralak freed Neri so he could protect the witch from Silver Hollow. Now I have a loose god spirit to locate. One who supposedly wants to see me reign as emperor of these lands, yet failed to offer his aid on Winter Road. A flicker of reflected firelight snags my attention and my gaze falls to the altar, to my grand gift. When I reach for the weapon, the entire piece, even the blackbone blade, is frigid. But at least it's here. Surely my lord will be proud. Two good things did come of this, I tell him, doing my damnedest to mask any hint of regret about the first matter. I captured Colden Moeshka, and I learned that Rainer Bloodgood had possession of your godknife, my lord. After centuries of absence, I brought this treasure home. I extend the blade in supplication as a question rages, one I must ask, no matter how foolish. Did you know where the Godknife was, my lord? That the King's Collector was its maker, and Rayner Bloodgood its keeper, all this time? I've pondered this for days, if that was why he sent me to raise the valley. The only way I had known was because Garujo's soul recognized the Summerlander magic on the blade when the witch and I fought on the village green. Seconds after she ripped the Godknife across my face, Garujo's whisper of keeper and all the understanding he could provide echoed through me. A pregnant pause fills the air. For several terrible seconds I'm certain I've overstepped, but nothing happens save for an answer. Her father was the keeper. The witch inherited his obligation the moment the blade returned to her family, and she grasped its hilt. When he died and his soul entered the shadow world, I knew this time would come. I cannot help but wonder how, but this time I decide against inquiring further. In regard to all else, he says, you will be rewarded for capturing the Frost King and for sacrificing Garujo. As for Neri, for now he is no matter. I will deal with him in time. Your primary concern is to prevent that keeper from setting foot in the City of Ruin. She and Undralak are no doubt on their way there now. If they are allowed to interfere in our plans, my resurrection and your future as the Lord of Tyresia are but a dream. By all the sainted ancient ones, that insignificant witch is forever an obstacle, though I'm beginning to question if she's ever been insignificant at all. I'll send word to my men in Malgros, my lord. My general is en route to the coast as well. I pause, carefully selecting my next words. There's an issue, though. I can offer no aid in locating the keeper. Undralak bound himself to the witch, claimed her, carved his mark upon her skin. He will protect her. Even now he shields her mind from me. Though I met him when he and Colden Moeshka visited my palace after King Regner died, I hadn't known his identity. In truth, I know little about Undralak, only what I've read in history books. If he's anything like Khazira's scribes depict in their tales, however, I'm not confident my assassins can stand against him, much less him and Rayner Bloodgood. Anger roils beneath my skin. How could such a revered Eastlander share his sacred power? So foolish, so traitorous, so fucking problematic. A resonating breath snakes through the room. Think, little prince. If Undralak is shielding her mind, his power is awakening. Take him as a source to siphon. You will require a fount of power to succeed with conquering the Summerlands. It won't be long until Undralak's magic grows strong enough to see you through any battle or war that lies ahead. I clench my offering hand so hard that blood flows from my sliced palm and drips to the stone floor. Take Undralak, the greatest sorcerer Tyresia has ever known, feed from his power and soul. If I can manage that, gods and men be damned. A moment passes, and my lord continues as if he didn't just present the most impossible yet most desirable solution. For your second task, he says, you must unearth the fury at Unmoritra. Soon. Her value is limitless. Use her to whatever end, so I can return to the land of the living and ensure that Tyresia is yours. Doubt and hesitance dominate my thoughts, as they have since this possibility was first mentioned many weeks ago. Though history holds that Fury died 3 centuries past, according to my lord, she's still very much alive. Like Undralak, she's a whirlwind legend I've only ever read about. A very deadly legend. Chained to the pits of the earth for attempting to overthrow King Geron's throne after Thameos died. Still uncertain, I soften my voice. My lord, I don't possess the power to enter Unmoritra. I cannot break through your wall of runes. And Fury, After all these years in isolation, she must be mad. I need her whole, and that will be a struggle, as will convincing her to cooperate. I've a feeling she's going to be rather angry. A low laugh rumbles from wall to wall and slithers around every massive column. I follow the sound from the arched observation nooks along the sides of the room to the sloped rafters set into the high mosaic ceiling. Though impossible, it feels as if Thameos, long-dead god of the Eastern Territories, is right here. "Un Moretra will know you," he says, "and Fury will cooperate. Bind her with a clever deal before you free her. Offer her complete freedom in exchange for her aid. Restore her health. Then, if your men cannot rise to the task of capturing Undralag, Fury will. She will have no choice. Fury can see you and the Frost King safely to the Summerlands." The Frost King. "My lord, you're certain Asha's curse doesn't extend to Mount Ulra?" "Though I know better than to show doubt, I must know. The king won't turn to dust if I take him there." "Why so worried?" Thameos says. "I need him. I would not ask if it could not be done. Mount Ulra is not the City of Ruin, and that was Asha's mistake. Do as I say, little prince. I have opened the way for you. All you must do is follow." The air moves once more, every firelight flares, then my lord's presence is gone. After long moments I stand on numb legs and in the ritual circle of the moon and sun study the runes etched beneath a stone of Ghent, the transparent amber orb fitted into the god knife's white granite hilt by none other than Undralag himself. "Take him," Thameos said. "Easier said than done." Then again, I've always enjoyed a challenge. The thought of such domination makes me smile, much as it pains the knife wound Reyna Bloodgood carved into me from temple to chin. I picture her then, the witch, see that pretty face contorted into her familiar scowl. Thanks to Undralag, I can no longer infiltrate her mind, and thanks to the Eastland Brotherhood's protections, she cannot see me with her gift of sight. But as I step into the full dark stretching over the vast and shining city of Khazira, I send her a message anyway, willing it across the many miles of land and sea between us. "The rise begins, lovely," I promise her, "and I'm going to make it heard."
2. Reyna. The Northland Break. Frostwater Wood, Winter Road. The gift of sight comes with deepest intuition. A vibration in my blood, chills across my skin, a tremble in the wind. I'm still learning the many facets of this ability, my exploration a shallow one. But each of those things are happening right now, as though the night itself contains a message I can't hear. I feel the message, though, tapping on the barrier Alexis erected around my mind to keep the prince at bay. The attempted intrusion is powerful enough to answer the question that has dominated our camp discussion since we left the castle. "The prince is up to something," I signed to Alexis. "I think he is on the move." Alexis sits across from me, a fire burning between us in a clearing on the side of Winter Road. The wood and all its creatures sleep, save for a white wolf howling mournfully in the distance, and a lone night bird singing a sorrowful song. Though the threat of a cold, hard rain hangs heavy in the air, Joran Dulevia, a water witch and Winterhold's bowyer, maintains a shield over us tonight. He's tired, so it won't last for long, but the respite is much needed. The journey thus far has been trying for several reasons, mainly the downpours that have slowed our travels. Many from our group rest on a bed of pine needles, drying out near the blazing warmth. There were over 24 of us when this journey began. Now there are 9. Some gave up early on. The rest turned back yesterday, too weary to continue. We need this rain to stop so we can reach the valley and let Finn and the others know we're alive. Then we must head south. Malgros is a 3-week ride from Hampstead Loch if we're swift and the weather favors us. Once there, a new battle awaits. Securing passage across the Malorian Sea, and even more difficult, a way through the magical wards surrounding Fiadrumera's City of Ruin. Time is not on our side. My sister looks up at me. She sits near Alexis, sharpening her dagger. To her left, leaned on one elbow, is Joran, hailing from the Icelander village of Reed. Callan Terzerak, a rune witch and diviner from the Mondulak range, sits beside me, drawing different runes in the earth. Hel and Ronan are to my left, watching the flames dance as they share a pouch of pine nuts. Keth Rukano and Yegalor, warriors from the Iceland village of Tori, have already retired for the night.
Did you see him?
Alexis signs.
The prince?
I shake my head and toss the water from my wooden scrying dish, releasing the last crimson tendrils of a vision that wouldn't form. I've seen Finn and the other survivors roaming the burned villages, burying the dead, and salvaging anything they can find. I've also watched Vex riding south on horseback, and I've seen Colden cast away in a dungeon for the last 9 days. But the prince? He's as impossible to find as a mote of starlight in this lightless wood come midnight. All I see when I look for him is a red mist filled with dozens of floating runes linked by magical threads. Runes I've drawn for Callan. Runes, they say, are for protection, invisibility, and blessing. Still, even though I can't see him, I'm certain his plans are sliding into place. A piece of wood shifts in the fire, sending sparks flying. I flinch from the heat that washes across my face. Our nightly fire sometimes feels like a torment rather than a means of survival. Just another portal into painful memories and nightmares. I've struggled ever since we crossed the remains of the prince's campsite. One whiff of the death scent that lingered over the wood, and any memories I'd suppressed rose anew, sharp and violent. I relive it all too often. The fire, the death, the fear. Even the gates of the shadow world antagonize me with their promise of an eternal cage. I can still see all those souls waiting there, each one fixated on my presence when the prince dragged me under. I doubt I will ever stop hearing their hissing voices. Keeper, seer, healer, resurrectionist, murderer, witch. They were only wrong about one. I'm no resurrectionist. Comfort caresses the bond, warming the rune above my left breast with awareness. When I glance up, Alexis's concern seeps into me, warm and assuring. He's so skilled with the bond, as though he's been through this before. Magical scholar he may be, but if I'm the first he's claimed, how is this so simple for him? For me, there's an insurmountable distance between us when it comes to the rune. When Alexis reaches out to me, I feel it so wholly. But when I try reaching him, I find myself standing on a precipice, looming over a beckoning void. Callan says the chasm is manifested fear or worry or some obstacle my mind has conjured, one I can't seem to conquer. My thoughts are distracted because Joran is watching me. The gray of his eyes almost matches his gray-tinted skin. The argent ring around his iris is gleaming. He drags a wide-knuckled hand through his long silver hair and gestures between me and Alexis, arm at rest on his bent knee.
Always so secretive, you two. Why not share? It's rude having open conversations most of us can't understand.
Maybe you should try learning Reyna's language like the rest of us,
Callan says, wiping the gathering mist from their tan scalp. Half of Callan's head is shaved and marked with runes, the other half covered in black and silver hair, braided against their skull like Nephilim's.
It isn't easy, Joran,
Ronan adds.
But if we can learn, so can you.
A small smile forms on my face. I haven't known Ronan or Callan long, but they've already won pieces of my heart.
Joran huffs, as if the very thought of learning to communicate with me is ridiculous.
It's probably a wasted effort.
Hel pops a pine nut into her mouth.
According to Nephili, Alexis became fluent in a matter of weeks. It would probably take you eons.
Nice try,
Joran replies.
I don't offend easily, though I might find it embarrassing to be an immortal sorcerer with nothing better to do than learn a rarely used hand language so I can talk to a pretty girl.
Alexis trains his stony focus on me. The irritation in his stare shimmers, his impatience with the Icelander visibly rising. Alexis is our leader, a preeminent sorcerer with one weakness when it comes to learned power. Water magic has forever eluded him. With fiery archery skills and command over water, Joran knows his importance to our group. He hasn't been much aid with the unrelenting rain because of the physical demand while traveling for hours, but he may be critical in seeing us safely across the Malorian Sea and desert provinces of Skeytrana, south of the Summerlin's main port city of Itunen. For those reasons, he holds little fear of being cast out. A muscle feathers in Alexis's jaw.
All Rayna said was that the prince is up to something.
His fingers worry with an old key that hangs around his neck like a pendant.
A memento from a long time ago,
he told me shortly after we left Winterhold.
A talisman.
For what, he can't remember.
Up to something,
Joran mocks.
Genius deduction from our brilliant seer.
A growl resonates from Alexis's throat. Joran sits dangerously within the witch collector's reach, my sister the only barrier, and not a good one. She drags a small whetstone down her dagger's edge and cuts a sharp glare at Joran before returning to her work. She and Joran are forever bickering, so I'm surprised when she holds her tongue, though thankful. Another complication has been that some in our band, namely Joran, didn't take kindly to learning that Alexis turned the soul of a vengeful god loose on their homeland. For me. It's why I sit across from Alexis and not at his side. Why I sneak into his tent once everyone has gone to sleep. Why we keep our hands to ourselves until we're alone. The last thing we need on this journey is more friction, but the constant closeness is beginning to rub everyone raw. Our only salvation is that Neri isn't in Winterhold. He and his wolves follow us instead, despite his bargain with Alexis being fulfilled. The wolves keep a healthy distance, and Neri has taken the form of a curious cold wind at our backs. We don't know what he wants or if he'll make himself known. I figure there's a reason he follows so closely, though, and that his appearance will come. Like most dreadful things, it's only a matter of time. At Alexis's right side, Helena holds her hand out to Ronan. A long red braid slips over his shoulder as he offers her the pouch of pine nuts. With a hard flick, Hel thumps a nut straight into Joran's chest. I've no doubt my friend had been aiming for the Icelander's face. How I wish she'd hit her mark. Joran swipes the front of his sweater.
Are you always such an atrocious child?
Hel arches a challenging brow.
Are you always such an atrocious asshole?
Only when he's breathing, Nephili says. Joran's smirk turns into a smug smile.
You once loved my breathing, heavy and in your ear all fucking night.
Nephili whips her head around. Everyone's eyes go wide, including mine, as repulsion and disbelief tighten my sister's face. Gods, we've all felt the tension between her and Joran, taut and ready to snap. But until now, not even I knew why that tension existed. A reminder that there is much I still need to learn about my sister. Alexis's voice is as deep as the low-rolling thunder to the west.
Stop talking, Joran, if you want to keep talking at all.
The Icelander just grins that insufferable grin.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?